everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's Nick Wright. Brian Westbrook is with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I like it.
I feel like you glossed over me a little bit. That's Nick Wright. Brian Westbrook
is here
this morning.
Apologies.
My God.
Apologies.
But it is good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you as well.
Absolutely.
All right.
I know you had a busy weekend. Able to catch any football this weekend?
I caught a little bit of football. Oh, okay. A couple of games.
Pretty interesting. Some results from this weekend. Hope we get to talk about
AFC Championship Sunday, just 3 days away. We got four teams, we got two games, and we got one place to start. The AFC matchup Nick is slightly excited about. Here we go. The Titans have the simple task this weekend of slowing down the Chiefs, a Chiefs team led by reigning MVP Patrick Mahomes. A Chiefs offense coming off a game where they rattled off seven consecutive touchdowns. They are fast, they are healthy, and they are focused. Just ask wide receiver Tyreek Hill, who knows just how unstoppable this offense can be.
I feel like nobody in NFL can guard any of us. I mean, and that's no disrespect to nobody. That's just the confidence that I got, I mean, in myself and just the wideouts I got around me, including the tight ends and the running backs. I feel like no DB unit, no secondary unit, no linebacker or any defense can guard any of us. So man-to-man is just easy for us to beat. And if you just allow us to just run through zones, it's even easier.
I love that he's like, no disrespect to anybody, but let me tell you what. What do you think, Nick? Is it a mistake giving the Titans bulletin board material? I know that you don't buy into bulletin board material, but a lot of the athletes that come out here say it's an actual thing, and we'll get to Brian in a second.
Well, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. I'm not a big believer in the bulletin board material as far as were the Titans going to be less focused on stopping the Chiefs offense with a chance to go to the Super Bowl, the biggest game any of these guys or almost any of these guys have ever played in until they heard Tyreek Hill kind of disrespect them in a very self-congratulatory way. And they're like, well, now we're locked in. So I don't really care about the bulletin board part of it. I do care about the substance of what he said. And I don't think he's right when he says nobody can guard any of us. I would change out the word any for the word all. Nobody can guard all of them. That is the problem the Chiefs pose when you have a quarterback who can make every throw on the field to every quadrant on the field. So you have to defend, you know, every blade of grass, as the cliche goes. And you've got your five top pass catchers on the year. Travis Kelce has a game where he had 134 yards and three touchdowns. It was last week. Tyreek Hill has a game where he had 157 yards. Sammy Watkins had a game where he had 198 and three touchdowns. Demarcus Robinson had a game where he had 172 and two touchdowns. Rookie Mecole Hardman had a game where he had nearly 100 yards and a touchdown. That's five guys, all of whom, aside from Kelce, have blazing speed, and Kelce might be the very best in the league at his position, that you are left without any correct answer, and it's what he alluded to at the end. The Chiefs' offense has absolutely shredded zone defenses since Mahomes has taken over, to the point to where teams have mostly, even zone teams, have abandoned playing that, particularly in the playoffs. But if you go to a man defense, Brian, tell me if you disagree, it becomes a numbers issue.
Yeah.
If you are going to do what Houston did, which is double Tyreek Hill, you run out of people to as far as you're going to have to go on single coverage on almost everyone else, and then Travis Kelce will eat you alive. And if you try to take Travis Kelce away, then you're going to have to single Tyreek Hill. And if Patrick Mahomes is healthy, and therefore he will be accurate, that's going to be bombs over your head. That is the unsolvable question about the Chiefs' offense. And to me, that's what Tyreek's talking about.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what Tyreek Hill says, but I absolutely hate bulletin board material. Now, listen, don't say those types of things, especially heading into the biggest game of your season. And I am a believer that gives another team some incentive to go out there and try to stop you. And I know Andy Reid, I've played with him for 8 years. He is a believer in bulletin board material. He wants to keep everything in-house. But what Tyreek Hill said is absolutely true. It's hard to guard these guys, and it's because of a couple of different things. The first thing is that they can affect you on three different levels. And normally, it's Tyreek Hill going deep. You have Travis Kelce working the middle of the field. Then you have Hardman or Watkins or a running back in the flat, the short area. Yep. The great thing about this offense is that they're multiple. Now you can get Travis Kelce going deep, Tyreek Hill working the middle of the field, or a running back working the middle or the short part of the field. And so when you have different personnel, when you have multiple formations and shifts and motions, now you can run almost the same exact plays with different people doing it, and it looks like a totally different thing. That puts pressure on the defense, and now it's just hard for defenses to be able to stop that type of offense. What he said is absolutely correct. The way that he said it in front of the media, that's the wrong place to do it. You don't want to do that before the biggest game of your career.
But doesn't it work a little bit in the Titans' favor in that, for the most part, as successful as they are, the Chiefs' offense is one-dimensional? They didn't rely on the running game. They don't push the running game. They don't focus on the running game. So if you can stop Patrick Mahomes from doing what he does, I mean, whether it's double-teaming Tyreek Hill, but you know they're not going to run the ball, doesn't that play in the Titans' favor?
Well, I think it does in a little bit, but the big question is, can you stop Patrick Mahomes? There just hasn't been very many teams that have had the ability to stop Mahomes and then stop Kelce and then stop Watkins and stop Hardman, like you mentioned, and then maybe you have some help from Williams out of the backfield. It's just not very many teams that have enough players to match up to be able to stop those things in these types of games. It's a matchup thing, and there's not many teams that can say we have enough speed to match their speed. Now if we play zone, we don't have the ability and wherewithal to stop Travis Kelce. It's just hard to compete against these guys.
There's only one way to slow down this offense. You have to immediately get a consistent pass rush without sending extra people. You have to be able to consistently get home with four rushers, and the Titans don't have the personnel for that. Now, if both favorites win this weekend and we get a Chiefs-Niners Super Bowl, now we're talking about something a little more interesting, because you have the best defensive front in football to where you never have to send extra people if you don't want to. You can use seven guys in coverage, and Patrick's got to get the ball out of his hands quickly. But Tennessee had one guy with more than five sacks this season. Zero guys in double-digit sacks this season. When they played earlier this year, Patrick had 450 yards in his first game back from the kneecap injury. And so I don't think it is, I understand it sounds simple as stop Patrick Mahomes, but it's similar to what I would use cross-sport analogy in the early 2000s. How did you stop the Lakers? Stop Shaquille O'Neal. Okay, good luck. They won three. Everyone knew what they were doing. Everyone knew what it was. More contemporarily, how are you going to stop the Warriors? Take away the three-pointer. Okay, but if our guys are just better than your guys, even if you know what we're doing, even if you know we are not going to show any commitment to the run game, especially because they do have a mobile quarterback in Patrick, in that if you are just totally selling out against the pass, he'll do what he did against the Texans, which is on a few key plays say, there is no one in front of me for 25 yards, I'll just scamper up the sideline. That's the problem, because of how they built this team with so much speed and the perfect quarterback to take advantage of it.
They built this team in a great way, because if you say we want to stop Tyreek Hill, you can double team him. Yep. Then Travis Kelce beat you up.
And the Texans took Tyreek Hill away.
They absolutely did take him away. And then the other part is you possibly could figure out a way to double team Kelce and Hill, because they have so much talent. That means Hardman gets off. That means Watkins has a day. And when you talk about the big plays down the field, there's no better quarterback in the league to have than Patrick Mahomes. He's going to spread the ball out to a lot of different people. You talk about that week 10 game. Nine different people caught the football. So he's not going to say, I'm just going to focus on one guy. I'm going to throw the ball to the open man. That's why this offense is so hard to stop.
And to bring it full circle, if we're going to get back to bulletin board material, I would not like it if a Chiefs defensive player was like, man, Derrick Henry ain't nothing. He's not going to do anything. Because if it does exist, that's a guy who can really hurt you. Right. And that is the Titans' path to victory is not slowing down the Chiefs' offense, because they don't have a way to do that unless the Chiefs have an unprecedented number of self-inflicted wounds. Titans' path to victory is doing what they did when they beat the Chiefs two and a half months ago, which is, okay, you're going to get 30. We're somehow going to manufacture 35. I don't know they can do that.
As long as the overconfidence is just confidence, what you don't want to say is, oh, we're playing the Titans. Let's really focus on who we're playing next. Because they have the habit of weeks later saying, you know what, we looked past that Titans game. We wanted to get to the Super Bowl, and that's what you don't want to see with overconfidence and things like that.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes. That doesn't seem right, especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you, even on nights and weekends. They're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right so you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
All right, on to Sunday's Packers-Niners NFC Championship matchup. Last time Aaron Rodgers saw San Francisco's front four, he didn't see much of anything else. He was sacked five times, lost a fumble, and finished with just over 100 yards passing. But that was nearly 2 months ago, and Aaron Rodgers isn't your average quarterback. Just ask Niners head coach Kyle Shanahan.
Probably not anyone on the planet who throws better than him. I mean, there might be a couple guys that you can compare with him, but I mean, his arm talent is just unbelievable. His athletic ability is unbelievable. He's always been able to run around, extend plays, make throws from any angle, and he's a very intelligent guy who can get them in the right play, and it's hard to throw stuff at him that he's not prepared for.
All right, let me ask you, Brian, who's got the edge on Sunday? Is it Aaron Rodgers or is it this Niners defense?
I think it's the Niners defense, and it's really for the same reason we talked about in the last segment. They have the ability to rush four or five people and be able to get to the quarterback. Now you're able to cover in with six or seven guys in the back end. And if you ever need to get to the point where you need to double team Davante Adams, this is the time to do it because you have the ability to rush with four and be able to affect the quarterback. And so when you talk about advantages, I have to go to the 49ers side because they have the ability to do the things that no other team really in the league that has that same ability. Last week, they had six sacks against the Vikings. All of those first round picks that they have are front, all of those guys had a sack. They have the ability to attack the quarterback. However, I don't think the game is going to go the same way as it went in week 12. I don't think the Packers are going to fumble on the fifth play of the game and then have three straight three and outs after that and six punts in the first half. That's not going to happen again. I think Aaron Rodgers is able to move the ball. However, this is a tough defense to play against. They're physically sound up front. They are aggressive. And I think Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator, knows how to attack this offense. And if you take away Davante Adams, now Aaron Rodgers has to trust someone else, and I'm not sure that trust is there.
The Niners defense has the clear edge over the Packers offense. If the Packers are going to pull off this upset, if they're going to get to Aaron Rodgers' second Super Bowl of his career, it's going to have to be because the Packers defense really takes advantage of where they have advantages on the Niners offense.
Which is where?
Well, which is forcing turnovers on Jimmy Garoppolo. Only two quarterbacks in football this year. I think Jamison Baker threw an interception in more games this year than Jimmy did. Jimmy threw 11 of his games this year. He threw a pick. Baker, I think, was 13. Jamison was 12. Like, force turnovers, get to the opposing quarterback. That's where the Packers' edge is going to have to be exerted because while the Niners have a decided edge when the Packers have the football, the question is how big of an edge is it? In the first game, they won the game by doing that. The Niners offense didn't really get rolling at all in that game, certainly not until the very end of the first half, but the Packers offense was totally inept. It looked like it was the worst offense in football. They're not, obviously, but that's what that defensive front made them look like. Your point on Davante Adams, I think, is a stellar one. Yesterday, we were asked if Amari Cooper leaves the Cowboys, where would I like him to go? And I said the Packers, because they have been trying to develop a second receiver alongside Davante Adams ever since they left Jordy go. Then they let Randall Cobb go. They've had Marquez Valdes-Scantling, all these different young players that they have tried to be turn into legitimate number twos. None of them have turned into that. Jimmy Graham has been a bit of a disappointment in Green Bay, that huge play against Seattle notwithstanding. So if you are the San Francisco 49ers, you say, okay, we hope Aaron Jones doesn't kill us, but we are going to make sure Davante Adams does not kill us. Now, I'm sure Richard Sherman's going to say, let me handle him one-on-one, but you don't have to do that.
Right.
Because you can get home with four. I mentioned a moment ago how the Titans only have one guy with more than five sacks. The Niners, it's man after man that is a threat for a two or three sack game. Yes, Nicky Bosa's sensational, but Dee Ford's a guy they traded for this offseason to add to that pass rush. Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas, the former number three overall pick of the draft, is the worst of those first round picks. Even he had a sack in that game against the Vikings. So this is where the Packers, I think, have to kind of hold on for dear life. Hope they can hit a couple shots. Don't have those quick three and outs. Don't let Rodgers get sacked a half dozen times the way he was in the first meeting. But when healthy, Brian, this Niners defensive front has been as dominant as any unit in either conference in the entire NFL. That is what has propelled them to this point.
That defensive front has been absolutely great. Here's the thing that the Green Bay Packers have to do. They have to be successful on first and second down.
Yeah.
If they get into a situation when it's third and seven, third and eight, third and nine, that's disaster. That spells disaster.
Knows their passing.
Absolutely. And the whole world knows, not only the whole world, those front four, more importantly, have the ability to get to the quarterback, and they know that you're passing. Here's some stats on Davante Adams and how critical he is to that Packers offense. In the last eight games, he has 91 targets. The next closest guy is Alan Lazard with 33 targets in the last eight games. So if you take away Davante Adams, in effect, you almost take away 90% of that offense because he has the ability to hurt so many people, and Aaron Rodgers loves throwing him the football. And so if I'm the 49ers, I'm saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to start the game. I'm going to rush four. If we can get to the quarterback, I have no reason to change that. If something happens where you're completing the ball down the field, I'm just going to start double-teaming Davante Adams and now make Aaron Rodgers find someone else. And if he can beat us with someone else, then I'm okay with that. But if I'm not going to allow Davante Adams to beat us.
To your point, 10 times this year, Davante Adams has had at least 60 yards from scrimmage. 10 times the Packers have won those games. 10-0 when he has at least 60 scrimmage yards. Not even a huge game. 4-3 when he's held to less than 60 yards from scrimmage and their points per game go down by a full touchdown. He is the only weapon Aaron Rodgers actually trusts right now on the offense.
I know you're a big fan of Kyle Shanahan and what he's done this year. How much of the coaching mismatch between LaFleur and Shanahan will actually affect this game?
Well, with respect to your former coach, your friend, and the coach of my team, Andy Reid, I think Kyle Shanahan's the best coach left in the playoffs. I think Kyle Shanahan is an A-level coach that will be an A-plus coach if and when they win the Super Bowl, either this year or at some point in the future. The only thing that's missing is sustained playoff success. It's unfair for me to talk about a massive mismatch in relation to LaFleur because he hasn't been around long enough. Instead, I will just say it like this. Kyle Shanahan, it is a coaching mismatch against 90% of the coaches in football, in my opinion. I think there are Sean McDermott, who I think is a very good coach and also a young coach. I think it'd be a coaching mismatch. If it's Andy Reid, it's not a mismatch, but I still give the edge to Kyle Shanahan. So LaFleur, I think he's done a really good job. Rookie head coach, egos in Green Bay, a lot of expectations. They're down 13-3 a game from the Super Bowl, but to me, he ain't Kyle Shanahan.
Even though you have an extension of LaFleur almost out on that field and Aaron Rodgers, who you know is going to audible when he wants to and when he has to?
I think in critical situations, you allow Aaron Rodgers to do whatever he wants to do. I think there's going to be a point in this game where you're saying, hey, Aaron Rodgers, just go have your way. You're going to go up-tempo. We're going to go no huddle. We're going to allow you to call whatever play that you want to play. That takes the coaching out of it just a bit. In playoff games, it's important to have an experienced coach on the sideline. In this case, for the Packers, you have an experienced coach type of player
in the game
for Aaron Rodgers. I just don't know that they have enough horses outside of Rodgers to affect the game in that way.
Yeah, Jenna, to your point, I think once the game starts, the coaching edge is almost muted entirely because Kyle Shanahan's coaching an offense that is going to be led by Jimmy Garoppolo and Matt LaFleur's coaching an offense going to be led by Aaron Rodgers. But the mismatch to me is about during the week. I think Kyle Shanahan is going to have guys at least early in the game potentially running wide open if Preston Zadarius Smith cannot get home quickly because he's going to look at tape. He's going to say, this is what they do. This is what we need to do. I think once the game starts, Rodgers can make adjustments. But that didn't matter in the Week 12 matchup.
Right.
So they were down. The game was
over.
And
he had like 104 passing yards.
Absolutely.
They had the pass. And now those pass rushers get to the quarterback.
100%. So I just think right now, the mismatch is far greater as we sit here this Thursday morning than it necessarily will be Sunday evening.
All right, to Tom Brady now and the much-anticipated decision that lies before him. So the Chargers are rumored to be in the running for the six-time Super Bowl champ if he doesn't reach a deal with the Patriots. Recently retired Chargers great Antonio Gates weighed in saying it would be a great sight to see in L.A. Nick, you've been on this from the start, that the Chargers would be a great landing spot for Tom Brady. Still feel that way?
It's the only place that makes sense other than New England. It is the only place that you can say, all right, can you conceive of Tom Brady playing with those weapons? Absolutely. They'd be the best weapons he's had in a long time. The best weapons he had since the Patriots were running that deadly, that very potent two tight end offense that they had with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. They the best as far as core of skill position guys maybe in total they've had since 07. So that checks that box. I also think, and I don't mean to get into Tom Brady's personal life, but I feel like we've got a window to it because of the Tom versus time and because Giselle is also a public figure.
They're both public figures.
Right, or else otherwise I wouldn't feel comfortable saying this. And Giselle's made it clear, she's been in Tom's ear for a long time about retirement. And if your partner has been saying for a long time, I don't want you to do this anymore, and you have to go to them and say, not only am I going to keep doing it, but we're moving. I think the where we're moving to has a big impact on if the response is the hell we are or okay. And I feel like with LA, even though I think her preference is stay with the Pats or just retire, you have nothing more to prove, and they don't really appreciate you in New England the way they should. Her response to LA is so different than Indianapolis, Tampa, Tennessee, these other places, because she has to worry about her career and her own superstardom as well. And by the way, they got a home there. And by the way, Los Angeles is a gorgeous place. I was lucky enough to live there for 16 months. It ain't bad. What people are saying about it, it's true if you've never lived in Southern California. So to me, it checks every box. And oh yeah, by the way, the Chargers need a reason for people to buy tickets to their new stadium. Right now, they don't have it. If you're doing a power rankings of interest in LA after Hollywood, Lakers, Dodgers, USC football, the Rams, how far down the list before you get to the Chargers? For all those reasons, to me, all signs all year have been pointing, if he leaves, the Chargers are the destination that makes the most sense.
I think you're absolutely right about it, checking every box. You're talking about the home in LA, the family situation. You're talking about the organization. You're also talking about the skill set of the players that he will have around him, which is exactly what they really wanted in New England. I, even with all that being said, I still think that Tom finds his way back to the Patriots. And here's the reason why. I think that Bill Belichick and that ownership group, they understand they're going to have to put players around a quarterback no matter who that quarterback is. Even though, let's just say you go get a rookie guy or a backup guy, Stidham. Even if you have him there, you're going to have to put players around him. Why wouldn't you want to go back to the guy that has been the greatest player in your franchise history if you're going to have to fill those positions already anyway? And so I think that if I'm the Patriots, I absolutely want Tom Brady back. And if I'm Tom Brady, I don't know that changing a team, changing an entire organization, going outside of what I've been comfortable with for the last 19 seasons is the way to go in your 20th year when your skill set has eroded just a little bit.
What do we know is woven into Tom Brady's DNA more than anything else? Winning. It's what he knows. It's what he does. You ask yourself, will the Chargers give him a chance to actually get back to the Super Bowl? Well, you know the Patriots will always give you a chance.
Oh, I don't know that I agree with that. If he thinks he's still excellent, and I'm sure he thinks he is, I think he looks at this year as an organizational failure more than a Tom Brady failure. And everyone talks, just quickly here, we talk about the Patriots adding more weapons for him. I think they will address the tight end position. That was a huge miss. I don't know how you have the greatest tight end ever arguably walk away and you do nothing about it. But does it seem very Belichickian? 2 years ago, he spends a first-round pick on a running back. Last year, he spends a first-round pick on a wide receiver. This year, he spends a second-round pick to acquire a wide receiver. He's now going to spend more capital, either draft or salary cap dollars, to get more offensive weapons when it had been a decade since he spent a first-round pick on a running back. It had been 25 years since he spent a first-round pick on a wide receiver. It would just seem very unpatriot-like and un-Belichick-like to this offseason, even if they bring Brady back, be like, and by the way, we're trading for Odell, so now we're going to have all... Right. It doesn't seem like that's their history.
Unpatriotic?
Oh, there you go. Maybe that's what I should have said. I like it.
on to the Chiefs now, and to steal a page out of my guy Nick's playbook, I'm old enough to remember a time when the Chiefs stormed back from 24-0 to beat the Texans last week.
Old enough to remember last time they were in the Super Bowl, too, Jenna.
It's true, Patrick. That's actually not true. That's not true at all.
She didn't get it at first.
No, and I
sorry,
take offense
go ahead.
To
my
it.
Bad.
Patrick Mahomes was as dialed in as he's been all season long, leading his guys to a 51-31 blowout. You're proud of yourself, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I liked it.
But despite putting Kansas City on his back, listen to what he had to say when asked about leadership on this team.
I think that's the great thing about this team is that I'm not the only leader on this team. There's leaders all across the board, every single position group, all around the team, offense, defense, and special teams. But what I rely on is just going out there and competing. No matter what the score is, winning or losing, I'm going to give my best effort on every single play. That's how I've been. That's how I was raised. And that's how this team kind of flows.
All right, Brian, does Patrick Mahomes need to play like the MVP for the Chiefs to beat Tennessee this weekend?
Yeah, I think Tennessee is a very good team. I think they're solid. I think they are aggressive defensively. But I don't think that Patrick Mahomes has to play like an MVP to beat them. They have a bunch of weapons offensively. And so if Travis Kelce catches a five-yard pass, he can take it 75. Same thing with Tyreek Hill and really the whole list of receivers and playmakers that you have. So those types of passes, because of their ability at those skill positions, you don't have to be special from Patrick Mahomes, who I think really has to play like an MVP or more so coach like an MVP is Steve Spagnuolo. How does he turn this into a quarterback game? How does he turn it into Patrick Mahomes versus Ryan Tannehill? If he can do that, then that changes the entire tempo of the game. That's going to take Derrick Henry out of the game completely. And so if you're Steve Spagnuolo, the only thing that you're worried about is trying to find a way to stop the running game of the Tennessee Titans. And I'm not so worried about Patrick Mahomes trying to play like the MVP. I just think he has to be good. And I think the guys around him are good enough to beat this Tennessee Titan team.
We've never seen, never in Patrick Mahomes' NFL career, him when fully healthy play a bad game. So let's just assume he's going to, we've seen him have bad starts. Hell, the AFC Championship game last year, they didn't score a point for the first half of the game. We've seen him have slow starts. We've seen him obviously make some mistakes. But as far as at the end of the game, look at his numbers, look at what he did. The only time in his career where he had, it's like, wait, what happened there? It was when he was dealing with that ankle injury early in the season and he couldn't plant on his throws and couldn't get it out on the edges where he's so dangerous. So I'm going to take it as a given. He's going to play a good game. I don't think he needs the type of performance that he had in the second half against New England in last year's AFC Championship game in the comeback against Tennessee or against the Texans to beat Tennessee. I agree with Brian. I think let's just assume Patrick Mahomes plays an average Patrick Mahomes game. What else do you need? You just need to make sure Derrick Henry is not going to become what he is on pace to become, which is the greatest running back ever. Like, people are wondering why I'm so confident in the Chiefs' ability to win this game. A lot of it is because I think Derrick Henry is an excellent player. Right now, the best running back in football. But he is playing like he is the greatest running back ever. And I just don't think that is sustainable over a full month of football, all in must-win games. Now, if he does, to get back to your question, then yeah, then Patrick's going to have to take advantage of every possession, every no three and outs, every third down, because you're going to have limited possessions, because Tennessee will find a way to manufacture at least 24, if not 28 points. But I don't think that's how this game goes. I think Patrick Mahomes can play a fine game by his standards. 270 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, and the Chiefs can still be in great shape. It should be noted, though, Brian, the last time these two teams played, even though the Chiefs lost, Patrick Mahomes did play like an MVP. He threw for 450, three touchdowns, 120 passer rating. He was sensational, and Tennessee is going to have to greatly adjust what they do defensively to try to account for that. And I think they look at it as our only real way to stop Patrick Mahomes is to keep him off the field, and that's where the Derrick Henry factor comes in. I just don't think Derrick Henry is going to average 185 yards for the playoffs against the opponents and the defenses that he's going to have gone up against.
The question for Tennessee, and really for the Chiefs, is if he gets 150, now are you trying to sell out to try to stop the run, and then he throws the ball over top of your head with Ryan Tannehill, who's been accurate as a passer? He hasn't put up a bunch of yards because they haven't needed him to.
Right. Are you confident Tannehill can go out there and do that.
I think he can, but again, he hasn't. We haven't seen it happen because they haven't needed to do that.
Yeah.
That means the question is, can you stop Derrick Henry? And if you can, now it's the quarterback game that I think the Chiefs wanted to turn into Patrick Mahomes, the MVP type of candidate, versus Ryan Tannehill, who doesn't have a bunch of experience in the playoffs.
No matter what, it's still going to go through Patrick Mahomes.
Well, listen,
Andy Reid's still going to say, go out and win the game for us. It's going to be on his arm.
If Patrick plays poorly.
Right.
Luckily, he never plays poorly.
Right.
Okay. So I don't think that'll be a problem.
Back here, first things first, now joined by former All-Pro running back Eddie George.
Eddie.
Thanks for hanging with us, Eddie.
You just said right before we went on the air that this is the time of year you miss it the most.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you right now that the Kansas City Chiefs could use you right now. You use a short yardage running back. I saw you when you walked in. It looks like you're in the exact shape you were in that picture right there.
Not quite. Maybe a pound or two over
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah. But, you know,
3% body fat.
Maybe a pound.
Yeah, running a 4.4. Still good. Go.
All right, Eddie, let's talk about your former team, the Titans, as they get ready to face the Chiefs. Your 10,000 rushing yards, Eddie, with Tennessee, still a franchise record, despite the fact that it looked like Derrick Henry ran for 10,000 rushing yards in last week against the Ravens. You were unstoppable then. Henry has been unstoppable now. So who does Derrick Henry remind Andy Reid of? Take a listen.
The guy played right there, Eddie. I mean, he and Eddie are similar size. You know, this kid might be even bigger than Eddie, but both of them were big, strong backs that could run fast. And you look at him and you go, man, they'd be good tight ends too. So, yeah, he's a heck of a player. Good kid, too. He's a really quality kid. So, he loves to play the game.
Eddie, feel good to get the kudos from Andy Reid?
Yeah. It feels good to get the love a little bit. I guess I'm considered one of the greatest running backs now, right?
You
said that he was playing like one of the greatest running backs last season.
Yeah, the run he's on is totally unprecedented. And that's what I looked it up this morning. The most carries you ever had in a three-game stretch was 100, which is an immense amount.
Yep.
He's at 96 through the last three games, and the numbers are eye-popping, 6 yards per carry. What does his body feel like right now?
I'm pretty sure he's probably beat up, tired. I mean, you got to think about, you know, how he ended off the year against Houston. I think he had 35 carries, over 200 yards against the Texans, and then goes up into New England. So you almost figure that his body is starting to wear down. However, he's a guy that's been durable, never been hurt. He had a little bit of a hamstring a few weeks ago, but I think that's okay now. But he takes care of his body. He's in the weight room every single day after the game, so forth. So he's doing all the necessary things to be okay. And now is not the time to think about, well, should we pull back on his carries? No, you got to put the foot pedal to the metal because you never know when you're going to be back in the situation again. You got to utilize this guy now while he has the hot hand.
One of the things that all teams that have faced the Titans have said, especially the last half of the season, is we're going to put 8-9 guys in the box and we're going to try to stop the run.
Yeah.
None of those teams have been successful. That's the same exact thing that teams said against you. We're going to put 8 or 9 guys in the box. How is it that they continue to be successful week in and week out against 8-9 guys in the box trying to stop the run primarily?
It's imposing your will. You know, when you got a guy that's 6'4", 250 pounds, and that can take it the distance, and that's learned to run in between the tackles and punish defenders, especially small linebackers, and they'll lean on you, that's what you have to do. It's demoralizing for a defense. When you can take a team's strength and turn it into a weakness, the New England Patriots, they were supposed to stop the run, turn that into a weakness. The Baltimore Ravens had the personnel up front. We're supposed to be able to stop them as well. Turn that into a weakness. So when you can do that, it's demoralizing for a defense to say, hey, you know what? You bring that guy in the box, number 22 will take care of him. You either run him over or take it the distance. It has been phenomenal to watch that.
We're lucky enough to have Brian Westbrook, one of the best running backs of his era, on the show often. And there are certain running backs I watch today, and I'm like, man, it reminds me a lot of B. Christian McCaffrey's one of them, instance. And he can sap the will of an opponent in a way similar to you, but very different than Derrick Henry. We're now joined by another one of the greatest running backs of the era, to Andy Reid's comparison. You guys, similar stylistically, not just because you play for the same organization.
B will just snap your ACL.
Right. I mean, exactly right.
He'll snap your ACL.
As opposed to go through your chest.
Right.
What I'm curious is, with your style, at what point in the game and how would you know when you could feel, oh, They don't want this anymore.
Oh, yeah.
They are trying to avoid the contact that at this point I am trying to distribute.
So my goal was to treat the first and second quarter like body blows, if you will. The gas tank, mm-hmm. like a boxing match. You know, hit them in the first quarter, you know, in the middle, hard three, hard four. Let them know this is how it's going to be for the rest of the day. So when the third and fourth quarters came, when it was time for me to really lay the hammer, I was getting the ball a little bit more. That's when the bigger runs were going to happen. So that's kind of how I approached the game, was I was going to use my size to my advantage and just wear on teams. And that's why I really focused on my conditioning so I can be the best conditioned athlete. So I knew that by that 35th carry that I would be just as strong as the first one. And that was the illusion I tried to set
up. So Derrick Henry's on this unprecedented run.
Yes.
And he's healthy and they're going to put the pedal on and they're going to push him and all of it.
Mm-hmm.
If by some chance he is unable to be as successful, do they have another path to beating the Chiefs?
I believe they do. Tannehill has the ability. He has the arm talent to put it into the tight window.
He's played well this year.
He's played extremely well. And A.J. Brown is a receiver that nobody's really talking about. He can stretch the field. And the reason why they haven't used him, because they didn't have to. When your running back is having that much success, you don't have to throw the ball 35 times a game. They said, listen, manage the game. Don't make mistakes, handle off the 22. But when it comes time to throw that fade to Jonnu Smith in the end zone or throw it over the top to one of your receivers, it'll be there. He can get it done. So I think in this game coming up, they're going to have to be a little bit more balanced because Spags is going to have something special. Listen, 22 is not going to beat us. He can't. I mean, he just can't do it. So they're going to have to load up the line of scrimmage, win up front, and force Tannehill to beat you.
We know what the Titans want to do on offense. They want to run the football down the throat. Mm-hmm. But what can they do defensively to stop what they'll face with Patrick Mahomes and that group of track athletes on the Chiefs side?
Well, if I had the answer, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. But I tell you what, Patrick Mahomes and that offense really impressed me because when you're down 24 points or 20 points in the first quarter and it looked like things were about to implode on them at home, like, how can they mentally get over that? But to outscore them 51-7 thereafter, and they want to say, okay, we gave them the short field and so forth, they made mistakes, but they still had to execute. Those touchdowns still could have turned into three points, and not gain the momentum. So from a mental perspective, that team is quite dangerous. So I'm not sure how when they get on and they're not dropping balls, it's going to be a tough task for any team to stop that explosive offense.
So I'm not a superstitious person, but I do believe that if people believe in a superstition, it can almost have an effect. Like, mm-hmm. I think that if you, I don't know if there's such a thing as team of destiny, but if enough people believe they actually are, I think their performance might be enhanced. They might play better.
Yes.
The reason I bring it up is the year you guys made the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. it all started on one of the wildest plays in NFL history, yeah. the Music City Miracle. And I know you guys ultimately came, unfortunately, a yard short of the Super Bowl, but you guys mm-hmm. You guys played some of your best football, including in that Super Bowl. You had all year after, in that playoff game, in the Music City Miracle, you didn't play your guys' best game of the year against Buffalo. The reason I bring it up is, what type of week-to-week, I hate to use the term momentum, does Kansas City have after the way they beat Houston because they were down 24-0 and because they then felt unstoppable for 2.5 quarters?
And that's the key for me, is that you do pick up that momentum. When you experience, like with the Music City Miracle, we've already experienced what it was like to lose in that situation. It felt like somebody died prior to that play. The ball goes to the uprights, like, okay, 16 seconds less. Okay, let's try to get the ball into Steve McNair's hands, let him do some magic, get us in field goal range, something. But I'm thinking on the sideline, like, man, this is, my season's over, and it hurts. But when the play happens, it's like, oh, my God. We did it, and it succeeded. You know, we passed the test. You know, they went to review, and everything was perfect. And now we're going to on to see the Indianapolis Colts. So that momentum helped us. So after what I saw last week, when that could have gone south real quickly for Kansas City, the ability for them to come back and the fashion they did it, they're a dangerous team from a psychological standpoint.
But the Titans, I think, have so much momentum coming into this. The Titans beat a great Patriots team. Then they beat a great Ravens team. No one really thought they could.
No.
I think they've got the momentum. Exactly.
What do you think about the Titans track? Beat the GOAT. beat the MVP at their place. So they come in with a ton of momentum. So that's what makes this a fascinating matchup to see whose will is going to outdo who. So that's what makes it a wonderful AFC championship game.
You played in a bunch of playoff games, but I think the experience in the regular season is hugely different from the experience in the playoffs. And then you go to the NFC or AFC championship game, it's a bit different as well. What's the experience going to be like for Ryan Tannehill playing in his first AFC championship game versus Patrick Mahomes, who was just in the game last year?
Yeah. For Ryan, I think it's going to be treating it like any other game. I mean, he's been playing his first playoff game really since the start of Houston. That's when it all started, to be honest with you, the regular season. They had to get in the tournament, and they were able to do that. And I think the experience that he has now going on the road to New England, going on the road to Baltimore, only helps him that much more. I don't think there's any more added pressure. Now all he has to do is go out there and perform, not turn the ball over and get rattled, but if he can protect the football and convert on third downs, make plays with his legs, I think he can do a phenomenal job for him.
The AFC South is a warm weather and a dome division. You obviously played in Houston and in Nashville. Mm-hmm. This weekend's game, the weather's not supposed to be, it's not supposed to be rain or snow, but I looked, it's supposed to be around 18 degrees around kickoff.
What? No sleeves.
Does that affect, maybe it didn't affect you.
Listen, won't affect that team.
Okay.
They've been there. They played. They beat Kansas City in Kansas City a couple years ago. Marcus Mariota
threw a touchdown pass to himself.
No sleeve weather. So that weather's out the window.
Okay.
It's a matter of will at this point in time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Running backs don't wear sleeves. Nah. They're the toughest guys on the field.
No sleeves.
I think
no
Greg Jennings is the only guy that came on set and said it was too cold. Yeah. I really want to.
Well, he's a receiver. That's what you expect out of him.
Warm and sunny.
All right, Eddie, I know you're working with the Connor Group talking about entrepreneurship. Why is business such a passion project for you?
Well, after I finished playing the game of football, I had to figure out what was next for me. And business was one of those avenues. I went back and got my master's in business at Kellogg School of Business. Started my own wealth management firm. And I'm here in town just to talk about, you know, my journey, the what not to do, what not to invest in.
Really?
And to really create fundamentals, things that you should look at when thinking about the next steps after football in terms of commentating and using that platform to do speaking engagements and other enterprises, how to leverage your brand and so forth. So I'm just here to tell you all my mistakes.
Can I ask who wins the game?
Which one? This one?
The Patriots game? The Patriots game.
Oh,
the
Chiefs, now you got
Titans
Tom
game.
On
I'm sorry,
the,
you said the goat.
You're a Pats fan.
I was. Yeah.
You're
gone
a little salty about that, aren't you?
No, she's not. I'm over it.
I like the Titans in this one. I think it'll be, if they keep it close, I like them to win by a field goal.
I invest some of Jenna's enormous amount of money in your firm, will you come back on the show the next time?
I'll come back tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll come back next week.
All right,
we'll see y'all in Miami. How y'all want to do it?
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Great job, man. Congrats on everything. Congrats on everything going on.
Thank you, my man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for always spending my money.
I'm investing it. It's going to grow.
Investment.
Enormous growth.
Much more first things first right after this.
My money's all tied up in football futures.
Yes, it is.
I do like the Titans to cover, though.
B-Dub, little in or out?
Let's do it.
Derrick Henry has been running over everybody this postseason. It is no secret that the Titans will feed him early and they'll feed him often in Kansas City. But, Brian, are you in or are you out on Henry rushing for more than 150 yards against the Chiefs?
I'm out. I think Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, is going to do all that he can to sell out and try to stop the run and make sure this turns into a quarterback game. That means Ryan Tannehill is going to have to throw the football down the field versus Patrick Mahomes. I don't think Derrick Henry has over 150 yards.
I'm in. I think that the difference here between this week and last week and between this team and a lot of teams is they'll stay with the running game. And even if they get behind, they know what a weapon Derrick Henry is, and they'll continue to give him opportunities to make something happen, and he will against the 26th ranked run defense.
I think Derrick Henry is sensational, and he has made himself a boatload of money this year, and good for him. He's not the greatest running back in NFL history, but that's now the standard in which he's being discussed, because it's like over under 100, a buck 50? 150 yards? I got to go under.
Yeah, but in today's NFL, 150 isn't really that much.
Well, it's not a lot.
It's like the old 100.
Okay, fair enough. But still, I think the Titans are going to be down big early. They're going to have to abandon it to a degree. I'm under for Derrick Henry's buck 50.
Hey, the folks over at Pro Football Focus released an article naming Carson Wentz the best quarterback of the 2016 draft class. Dak was second. Jared Goff was third. Brian, you in or out on Wentz being the best quarterback from 2016?
I'm in. I think Carson has all the tools. He's big. He's strong. He's athletic. He can get outside of the pocket. He can make all the throws. And I think these last quarter of the season, even though they didn't make a long run in the playoffs, they added confidence to his game. I think he'll come back next year much better than he has been this previous 4 years.
Yeah, I'm out. I think it's got to be Dak. When you look at it, every single statistic favors Dak, including health and including wins. So, and where he was drafted, value. So value, health, wins, every statistic, you got to give the nod to Dak.
I'm in on Wentz. The value is about to go out the window this weekend. And while you're correct over the totality of the careers, those numbers, it changes a lot if you talk about post-rookie season, where Wentz was not very good and where Dak was sensational. I think Pro Football Focus got this exactly right. I think it's Wentz here, Dak right behind him, and I think Goff is substantially beneath both of them. And I think Goff is going to be a huge problem for the Rams moving forward, but I'm in. I think Wentz is the best quarterback of the class.
And soon all three will have been paid as soon as they get Dak on board. Former Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett is reportedly interviewing to be the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants. Daniel Jones showed some peaks and valleys in his rookie year, but does appear to have a bright future. Brian, you in or out on Jones taking a leap in year two if Garrett is his OC?
You know, I'm in, but I'm not only in just because Jason Garrett. I think that Daniel Jones seems to be a student of the game, similar to Eli, similar to Peyton Manning. They obviously had the same coach down there. And so I think that he'll come back even better his second year versus his first. A lot of learning goes on in that first year for rookie quarterbacks. What can you do? What can't you do? Interceptions were an issue here. I think that he'll be much better in the second year.
Yeah, I agree with you. Regardless of who the offensive coordinator is, he seems to have traits that are going to lend themselves to him continuing to make a lot of progress. And that's what you really like about what you've heard about this player, is that his character lends itself to a lot of growth regardless of who's there.
Yeah, I'm out. And it has less to do with Jason Garrett and more to do about the player that you guys seem a lot more optimistic about than I am. The Giants, who they needed to hire, was the guy who a decade ago taught Tiki Barber not to fumble the football. Is Daniel Jones the most fumblingest guy I've ever seen fumble? And until he gets that worked out, I don't care how big and tall and strong he is. He's got to take care of the football. He was unable to do that his rookie season. I don't know that Jason Garrett fixes that, so I am out.
All right, to Tom Brady now. Recently retired Chargers great Antonio Gates was asked about Brady joining the team, and he said it would be a great sight to see him in L.A. Brian, you in or out on the Chargers being Super Bowl contenders if they acquire Tom Brady?
I'm out. And I think the world of Tom Brady and what he's been able to do over the course of his 19 seasons in the NFL. But I've also seen him this season, and it's just not the same guy. I don't know that he has to be as special if he went to the Chargers because they have more playmakers. I just don't know that he has the ability to ratchet it up to get to the Super Bowl if he goes out there.
Yeah, I thought Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates were buddies. I'd be bummed if my buddy was talking about someone else coming to take my job. But when you look at again, what they did this season, the main difference is Phillip Rivers threw some more interceptions. But across the board, they were very similar players. And you have to go to a new system with a new coaching staff. How much would they adapt to what Tom wants to do? And how much would they want Tom to adapt to what they want to do? And if you can't get it done with Phillip Rivers, you know, what makes you think you're getting him done with Tom Brady?
So you're out? You're out on Brady making him a Super Bowl contender?
Going to San Diego?
Yeah, to Los Angeles, either
well,
one.
Well, first of all, he's not gonna, so he's gonna be in, oh yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
No, he's gonna be in San Diego.
That's right.
Relaxing when he takes a break from OTAs in New England.
I can't believe you're out. Our lunch really had a big effect on your football opinions yesterday, Coach.
Yeah, and my wallet. he ordered more caviar than any person I've ever seen.
You shouldn't gamble with me, Coach.
Hey, at least you guys went out for lunch.
Shouldn't gamble with me, Coach.
It was unbelievable.
I'm out as well. You were about to defend Tom Brady. We don't have time for that. I'm out. Come on. Coach is right. Brady's not substantially better than Phillip Rivers, and with Phillip Rivers, they couldn't even make the playoffs.
You need to put it in the context of the new system.
New
the
system, new
staff.
This. He's got to learn West Coast time confuses people. So many things would be up in the air. I'm out.
Nothing matters. Insert player succeeds.
Odell Beckham was on the field to celebrate after LSU's championship. OBJ was seen handing money to the players on the field, which would have been funny if it was fake money. But Joe Burrow confirmed that the cash that Odell handed out was, in fact, real money. LSU released a statement saying they're aware of the situation and contacted the NCAA and SEC immediately because now it has become a situation. Brian, what is your reaction to all of this?
I just wonder how well the UCF, the LSU players would have played if they knew they were going to get cash on the field in their hand after the game. I don't think that Odell probably understood or even thought about the repercussions for this for some of the student athletes. I think Odell is kind of being Odell. That's something that you don't have to do on camera. If you want to glad hand a guy and give him a couple of dollars here and there, try to do it in the locker room or how they've been doing it for years at these big schools down south. You just don't have to do it on center stage with dollars, hundreds of dollars exchanging hands. I think that was just a bad look for Odell and the LSU program.
Okay, so this story really, really frustrates me. So listen, Odell likes attention. We all know that. I will concede that point before it is even made. He does a lot of things to generate attention. But the faux outrage this is going to generate is already irritating me, and it's only just begun. Does anyone have a problem with what actually happened if it's off camera? With a rich guy who's an alum giving these non-paid athletes money?
But it wasn't off camera.
I understand. Let me finish the point, please. The actual action, I think the vast majority of people think the NCAA's rules stink.
Yeah.
The vast majority of people do not like the way the NCAA allows. I think Coach O got a $175,000 bonus. Dabo Sweeney got hundreds of thousands of dollars of bonuses for just showing up in this game. And the players, of course, what they get is a state school education and room and board. Okay? So most people are fine with the fact that these guys could get $500 handshakes off camera, right? The issue is not even that they're getting the money. The issue is who's giving it to them. This is an Odell Beckham Jr. story because it's always an Odell Beckham Jr. story. Go ahead, Jenna, please.
It's an Odell Beckham Jr. story because it's always Odell Beckham that's doing these things. Okay. That's why it becomes a story
because it's small things he's doing
that individually wouldn't be a big deal, but you add up 35 small little disruptive things.
So let me ask you an honest question. Have we talked this week about the Pro Bowl wide receiver who got hammered and arrested for vandalism?
Julian Edelman. We have not.
If that was, I'm just curious, what do you think? If Julian Edelman was at a national championship game and handing guys money, and Odell got hammered in Beverly Hills and jumped on somebody's car, do you think it's Edelman's face right there? Because I think it's still Odell's.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is about, as it is always the case with Odell, and to mix metaphors, the criminal rather than the crime. It is about who he is, because people don't, in general, have a problem with student athletes getting extra benefits. Most people think we deserve them. People don't like the NCAA's rules. People aren't never caping for the NCAA. Oh my God, that is a violation of these amateurism. Nobody feels that way. But it's because Odell is polarizing, and yes, he does want attention. I concede the point. But who's the victim here? None. No one's going to lose eligibility, do you think? I think the guys who have eligibility left will give the money back,
right,
and the guys who don't will keep the money. So who are supposed to be offended for is my question.
I don't think you will be offended by anyone. I think that if you're the NCAA, you have a huge problem with it, with guys being on the field giving money out. That's the biggest issue. And I think if you're Odell, and I think you're absolutely right, this is a big deal because it's Odell. But to me, that means if I'm Odell, then I need to quiet it down just a little bit more, because I know the type of response that people have to me, that people have had to me my entire career, and that I'm going to draw cameras and a crowd and all those different things. If you're, to me, it's kind of simple. Just play by the rules. Play by the rules. And the rules have been for SEC school, for alumni, all for a long time. You give them handshakes in the locker room. You give those handshakes at the bus, not on the football field.
Don't you find it interesting that, I mean, we've had two athletes and a coach come out here today, that all three of them, and I would imagine, and from what I watched on a lot of the programs and what I've read, most of the athletes, former athletes, professional athletes, have an issue with it. Why do you think that is?
Well, why do you think none of the players did? Let me put it back to you.
The players that received the money?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they wanted it, and they probably needed it.
We haven't spoken to them about now what happens when they have to actually go back and take the money out.
Okay, well, we did talk to Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is how we know. He said it was awesome. The players thought it was awesome. It's Odell's money. I don't care about the NCAA's rules. Let me make this very clear. Most people don't. Brian Westbrook is sitting here saying, with respect, forget the rules. Just don't let people break the rules. Just don't let people know about it. Right?
Like, and that has been happening for a long time.
Of course it's always been happening. Go ahead.
No, I guess my question is then, so why do athletes, former players, have such an issue with it? Why did a guy like Eddie George we talked to, why do you have an issue with it?
I don't know. I know that...
That is on camera. That's the biggest issue for me.
Zeke's there. He didn't seem to have a big problem with it. Odell didn't seem to have a big problem with it. He was engaging in it. And the other sideline to this narrative is he's trying to steal the spotlight from the kids. I'd like that same criticism when Bill Murray crashes the next wedding. Because, oh my God, it's awesome. People love it. For some reason or another, people really like being around super famous people. So I just want to lay out what I think is an established set of facts here. The players loved it. It was extraordinary for his alma mater's recruiting. It was a great moment for him and the people he was dealing with. For some of the kids, they will actually get to keep the money. And a couple thousand dollars for some of those kids is an enormous amount of money. I happen to believe no one's going to lose eligibility over this. I don't think they're going to say, you're now suspended. I think most people agree they might have to give, some kids might have to give money back, but no one's going to be suspended for it. So it is a victimless crime that people enjoyed, but it's controversial because it's a circular argument. It's controversial because people on television are saying it's controversial. And I just don't find it controversial. I know I'm a voice in the wilderness here. I do think there was a Pro Bowl wide receiver who acted a fool this week. I think it's the guy who got arrested in Beverly Hills, hammered with Paul Pierce. Mm-hmm. That's the one I think. But he doesn't. And he's also the one, by the way, who's, you know, got suspended for PEDs for four games a year ago. But again, we don't care about that. We care about Odell's watch, and we care about what Odell does with his money. We care about the shoes Odell wears. We care about Odell. And so I thought what he did was super cool. And I bet the kids thought it was super cool. And I don't think they care that they might, that maybe what would have been cooler, to your point, if he does it off camera, they all get to keep it.
Yes.
Right? You know what I mean? Even the kids with eligibility left, they all get to keep it.
Listen,
he can Venmo
all I'm
those
saying
guys.
Is I'd like to talk about Odell after a game, or what he did in a game, or playing in the postseason.
Their season's over.
Right. Their season's over. Nick, should we play some drawing a blank?
No, that wasn't poor coaching.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd love to, Jeff.
All right, let's go. 49ers All-Pro tight end George Kittle was held out of practice yesterday with an ankle injury. Kittle leads the team in catches and receiving yards this season. Brian, start with you. The most important offensive player for San Francisco in the NFC Championship is blank.
I'm going to say Tevin Coleman, but the real answer is the running back group for the San Francisco 49ers. You know, you throw in Mostert, you throw in Breida as well. Their ability to run the football, to get on the edge, to affect the defense that way is going to be the tail of the tape. I think Jimmy G is good. He just doesn't have the playoff experience that I'm looking for in this game, especially when you're playing against one of the greats in Aaron Rodgers. I want to lean on the running back group if I'm San Francisco.
Yeah, my natural inclination is to choose the quarterback, but I have to go with Kittle. And I thought there was a significant difference when he came back in the lineup. And I'm not even talking about his ability or what he brings as a blocker, which is outstanding, and as a receiver, but what the intensity, the way that whole group lifted when he came back from injury, I thought was impressive. And he's the type of guy outside of the quarterback position that you look at and say, okay, a force multiplier.
Right. Yeah, I went with the quarterback because I think Jimmy Garoppolo is my answer. I think the Niners have such a sizable advantage defensively that the only way they lose this game is if Jimmy G turns the ball over. I think if Jimmy G plays a clean game, they are 90-95% to win. So to me, he's the most important offensive player. If he can just be a custodian, a caretaker in this game, they will advance to the Super Bowl. The Packers' path to victory has to be picking them off, Zadarius Smith strip sack, make Jimmy G's feet get a little quick, a little anxious in the biggest game of his career.
All right, moving on. Niners head coach Kyle Shanahan had some high praise for his opponent Aaron Rodgers, saying, quote, there's probably not anyone on the planet who throws better than him. A lot of competition for that spot with all the talent at the quarterback position in the league right now. Brian, the best thrower in the NFL is blank.
I think it's Patrick Mahomes, and I know Nick wanted to say it before I did, I think it's the truth.
My answer might surprise you.
He's probably the best thrower of the football. He just has the ability to make all the throws at all different types of angles, and he's kind of added that ability to get outside the pocket to make those throws on a run. It's hard to go with anyone else.
Yeah, to me, it's Aaron Rodgers, and it's all the things that you say that Patrick Mahomes can do, but it's doing that with experience, and sometimes being the best thrower is also the throws you decide not to make, and I think Aaron Rodgers has an advantage there.
I've annoyed Coach so much about Patrick Mahomes, I've turned him into an Aaron Rodgers fan. It's one of my greatest accomplishments of my career.
I have always been an Aaron Rodgers fan, for the record.
The answer is obviously the right answer to what Brian Westbrook had. It's Patrick Mahomes, and they told me to be quick here. Everyone knows why, so I don't need to even explain
it. The answer is obviously the right answer.
Yeah, that was the right answer. Correct.
The folks over at Pro Football Focus released an article naming Carson Wentz the best quarterback of the 2016 draft class. Dak was second. Jared Goff came in third. Brian, best quarterback from that 2016 class is blank.
I'm going Carson Wentz. And I think for the reasons that, you know, he's big and he's strong, he has all the ability to do it. I also think that he's getting better. I think Dak had improved the entire season this year compared to last year. We'll see how things change in Dallas for him with a new coach and things like that. But I think Carson Wentz has the consistency of Doug Peterson, his head coach still there. He got better. And I think with the health, he'll be a much better quarterback as his career goes on.
Yeah, to me, it's Dak. He wins in every statistical category, including winning and health, availability. And then you also look at the fact that the way he's received by his teammates, and that's one of the things that has been talked about with Wentz. He's been well-received there, and he's the greatest value in a later-round draft pick.
The value part, though, unfortunately for the Cowboys, ended in the final game of their season this year. I think Wentz is better. I understand that I'm a numbers guy, and the numbers say it's very close, and that Dak actually might have an edge certainly over the totality of their careers. But when I watch them play, I look at Carson Wentz and I say, oh, that guy should be a top five quarterback in this league for a long time if he can stay healthy. Dak, I don't see that with him. And I think a lot of those numbers, at least this year, came in games where he didn't play well early and then accumulated a lot of yards late. For a lot of reasons, I say Carson Wentz. I think they got this exactly right, though. Goff is third of the three, even though he's the number one pick of the draft.
Coach, thanks for hanging out today.
Hey, appreciate it.
We will see you tomorrow.
Yes.
We will.
We will see you tomorrow is what I...
Another fruit challenge, hopefully.
Of course. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.